That's slander.
Selfish cheapos.
Well,
it's, I mean,
the truth is the truth.
Far be it from me, as a guy without multiple chandeliers in his narthex,
the truth is the truth.
To take my time and just making sure we all pay fair share.
Look, we're not trying to pocket watch, but Pablo and I, our career earnings are not on Spotrac.com.
you can't say we're not trying to pocket watch and then literally go into pocket watching. You are trying to pocket watch. It's okay. I don't mind paying for you guys. I like.
Well, go to the website and pocket watch. That's different.
Pablo, if you had to make a bagpipe, how would you start?
I mean, obviously you remove all the legs.
Okay, good idea. I'm Dominique. Yeah,
we should be clear.
That's Pablo.
That's talking about animals' legs.
Yeah. No, we don't have to be clear. We do need to get to these topics, though. No time for lollygagging. We got good basketball stuff, and that's all Alabaster really wants is good basketball stuff on this show, right?
A lollygag is what the animal that I would stuff a pipe down its neck, that's what it would be doing.
Oh, man. You know how they say, like, the human mind or human brain is, like, designed to solve puzzles? Like, I feel like, Pablo, your brain is constantly in, like, the connection mode. Like, everything that has ever been said in your life, you're trying to, like, create a transition. I haven't read anything you've written in a while, but I'm going to go back and find something, and those better be the smoothest damn transitions ever. Because you're, like, uncomfortable jumping subject to subject without creating a connection.
Correct. This is actually a really deep insight into what my former life as a journalist, not on Spotrac.com, was like. This is by the way, speaking of just like fact checking here for a second.
By the way, speaking of, everything's a freaking transition for you.
Exactly. Stop
telling people how my brain works. Did the link for this show get like broken at some point, Alabaster? Because I want to promote this shamelessly.
I promoted it already.
Okay. I'm trying to, and it seems to be okay. Great.
What do we want to talk about first?
Yeah, we're going. Things are
okay. Twitter's broken for me, but you know that might just be me being hacked right now.
I tried, Alabaster. I tried to get us to the topic quickly, but Pablo didn't like it because it wasn't a smooth enough transition. So he brought us back to try to re-smooth.
Speaking of topics,
give it to us.
I appreciate you, Dominique, you with the functional fingers as an actual working journalist, getting us to the big story of the day, which is. The one story that everyone cares about this weekend, it is a huge story, and that's NBA basketball.
Yes.
And who's under more pressure with his new team, James Harden or Ben Simmons?
Oh, God. Can we just start by pointing out that Ben Simmons literally paid $20 million to not play for Doc Rivers anymore? And he's not the right answer to this question. A player paid eight figures to exit a team and wasn't successful enough at it until James Harden showed up and per Brian Windhorst, and my favorite piece of reporting, maybe from this decade, reportedly started screaming in every direction that he wanted out of Brooklyn. And so it has to be James Harden. It has to be the guy who is reunited with Daryl Morey, who now has the weight of a full championship contender on his shared shoulders with Joel Embiid. It has to be that dude. We get into everything else, but it starts with James Harden starting all of this, finally.
Sure. I mean, I assumed that Pablo was going to go and put it on his buddy Ben Simmons just because now you're a James Harden fan. So hold on. I need to know. Your fandom travels with Simmons, or does it stick with the 76ers?
What is immensely hard to untangle here because Pablo, our process originator.
That's right.
So much of his identity is wrapped up now, not only in the process, but also Ben Simmons on the 76ers succeeding in particular. And now that that's been separated, I'm not really sure where his loyalties lie. Like, did they follow Ben Simmons to the Nets where he wants him to thrive? Or do they stay with the 76ers and James Harden, like, has all your love been transferred on to Harden now?
They didn't follow Markelle Fultz, so I would assume that if your love for the process didn't follow Fultz, it should not follow Simmons.
I honestly, I'm still thinking through all of this. It's not easy for me to disentangle. I have fought so many wars on the hill that is Ben Simmons that I am genuinely rooting for him to be unbelievably awesome, as I've been saying he would be, on a team with a great fit. Like, I do want to be
pick
that
one
guy.
Coward. Pick one. Like, gonna, are you I'm a 76ers
I'm gonna,
fan?
I'm gonna end up making can, that jersey that parents wear.
If they play,
like,
no.
Down
no.
the middle.
They play,
and it's
in
like
the
half
conference
Ben
finals.
Simmons' name.
They play in the conference finals. Who do you want to go to the finals? That's all. The answer to 76ers.
Okay, here it is. Here it
like,
is.
Like, they have
it's
the process.
It's the 76ers.
They also have Nerd
it's
Elvis.
The 76ers.
It's everything you want.
But if they play the Nets in the conference finals, as may well happen, and Ben Simmons goes off and, like, dunks all over everybody who said that he sucked on his own former team, will I be shedding a real tear of, like, conflicted joy? Absolutely. I have shed so much blood for that cause.
What?
And now I want to be right.
No,
I want to be right, guys. Shocker. Want to be right.
When did you shed blood? You've never shed any blood for the 76ers. You just whined on television. What's up, Alabaster?
So,
how dare you?
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm actually going to stand up for Pablo for a second, who has been consistent in his fandom of the 76ers and the process. The person who I wonder about their fandom is Miss Mina Kimes, who only became a Nets fan when James Harden got to the Nets. Is she following the Harden bandwagon to Philly?
Or no? Yeah.
Judo move, Alabaster. Great point.
So I actually, you know, this was a real journey for me because we first started hearing whispers about this potential trade months ago. I think as everyone was looking forward to the coming offseason, where it's been reported for a while that James Harden might go to Philadelphia anyways, and receive a giant extension there, by the way, that'll go into his late 30s. So have fun with that, yep. Pablo. But, you know, I would say maybe like the beginning of this season, certainly going into it, I thought no way, because James Harden objectively is a better basketball player than Ben Simmons. And the Harden, KD, Kyrie trio should be an automatic ring. A lot has changed since then. Obviously, Kyrie's vaccination status has played a big part in why the Nets
pretty
have struggled
much everything changed,
so much. You know? But also, James Harden has been absolutely terrible as of late. Let me correct that, actually. Not absolutely terrible, but terrible for him. And I think that's what makes it kind of hard to evaluate this trade. Like, if James Harden returns to form, and I believe that is a giant if. I know we have seen him do it before, Nutty Professor style, but I don't know if it's going to happen again. If it does happen, this is an automatic W for the Sixers. They got the better player, put together an amazing roster. It would seem very, very, a bad move for the Nets, given that they're in the same conference. If, however, he does not return to form, if he looks like he has over the last month, shooting 29% from three, barely playing defense, showing the mildest effort, then I think it's a win for the Nets, who get a younger player in Ben Simmons, who people have forgotten is excellent at all basketball things other than shooting, and is a phenomenal fit with the roster. So I like it for the Nets, but I also will allow for the possibility that it could backfire in a big way, depending on what happens with Harden.
Well, if we believe like the All-Star election process, James Harden was like he was tanking, right? Like
yes,
it seems like everyone
yes,
in the NBA believes like people like LeBron James and Charles Barkley and Kevin Durant and Kenny Smith, these people seem to be insinuating that James Harden is fine. James Harden is going to show up and he's going to be just as good as we can expect him to be, or just as good as he was last year at his peak. That what he was doing this season was him acting out because of Kyrie mostly, which like I'm surprised why that it feels like so many people are coming down on James Harden and mad at him for forcing his way out of two teams, while also people seem to hate Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like he had an excuse right now that would force people to cape up for him, because the incense burning Kyrie is the reason why he presumably is the reason why he wanted out of this dream team situation.
It's amazing, by the way, that this whole trade involves maybe three of the most disliked players in basketball at this point, between Simmons, Harden, Kyrie, and I'm not sure where they rank now in the public imagination. Obviously,
yeah, somehow
Ben Simmons evoked a lot of ire for a while, but this latest, I mean, the double self-tank from Harden is literally unprecedented,
yes.
Pablo. And no, I'm just speaking from the perspective of someone who roots for the Nets. I was pretty freaking sick of it by the end.
Yeah, understandably, because he was doing it on purpose. The whole hamstring tightness thing, the whole idea of like, wait a minute, are we going to get the NBA finals with the clumps? to extend that cinematic reference. Yes, I think we are going to get a bunch of stuff being dropped away. And guess what? Underneath that is a real good NBA MVP candidate. And look, what the Nets need, incidentally, like, the thing about this trade, if you're Daryl Morey, is that there is no way that you wanted this trade to happen right now as much as James Harden wanted it to happen right now. Because even if you love James Harden, and we know nobody has ever loved a superstar, maybe as much as Daryl Morey has loved James Harden, the idea that you're going to give away two first rounders and Seth Curry, who happens to be, for a worthwhile note, the son-in-law of Doc Rivers, and Ben Simmons, who is, as I believe him to be, all of that away for a guy you could have signed outright. All of that away to the team that has lost 10 in a row. That Alabaster put up a card that said they were like leading the East right as of New Year's Day or something like that. Yeah. Whatever it was, something vaguely very different than what it is now to be, yes, first place in the East on New Year's Eve, haven't won a game since, are the worst defense in the league. You are fixing the Nets' problems if you are Daryl Morey. And the reason you do it is because you think that underneath that fat suit is the real James Harden.
Which I think is a reasonable risk to take. Like the presumption that next year you can run it back and James Harden's going to be there and Embiid's going to be the same type of Embiid, just as healthy as ever. Like that's a mistaken presumption. I don't think this was the wrong time for Daryl Morey. I think this was the best time because now is the best time, as our long gone friend Mike Golic Jr.'s wrist would tell you, that now or Monday is always the best time. And so this guy, as he goes into this team in this situation, one more year, a year later for James Harden, I think we have to assume that James Harden's career is on the decline. And yes, we can assume that Joel Embiid will be healthy playing MVP level basketball.
That's right.
We also know that there is no chance for them to win the finals without a legitimate like superstar perimeter threat. They have a superstar inside threat who also doubles as their perimeter threat. Like, that's an impossibility to win the finals that way. So they have a chance, as good a chance as the 76ers have had since they were actually in the finals, to win a championship because they've added James Harden. And I, crossing my fingers, hoping James Harden can be some version of himself, is better than going into the finals with Ben Simmons refusing to play.
That's what's so wild about this trade, right? Like, whenever something like this happens, we do, okay, winners, losers, grades. I kind of think they both won and the rest of the East lost. Like, the Bucks, the Heat are potentially losers. I'm not saying they're worse, they're better than those teams, but both of these teams, because of the unique scenarios they had found themselves in with these superstars, got objectively better by adding stars who actually want to play for them.
We don't know about Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons is gone.
Ben Simmons, I think it was Woj.
Calling up KD, calling up Sean Marks.
Apologies. Yep.
Patty Mills, his Australian brother is there.
Yes. Sean Marks, New Zealand. Brooklyn. So you got that whole connection in that
Oceania
part of the world.
Y'all don't want nothing with my Bucks, though, because we got Serge Ibaka.
Your Bucks.
When did they become your Bucks?
They became my Bucks yesterday when both of your crappy teams got better. And I was like, what would make me happy is that neither of your teams win, except I do love Kevin Durant, mostly because you guys hate him makes me love him.
Me?
But other than that, not you.
Kevin Durant.
I don't mean either of you. I mean you guys, as in the world in general.
You guys.
Yeah.
The royal
guys. The you guys who are watching this, they all hate Kevin Durant.
Can we just take a moment, to ponder? I'm legitimately setting aside my, very upsetting rooting allegiances. Just as a fan of basketball, and Pablo, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, I am fascinated to see Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons playing together. Seems like a dream match. Can you get into it a little bit?
I mean, all the things that Ben Simmons could not do in Philly, he won't have to do in Brooklyn. Doesn't shoot, he'll be like the fifth offensive option. Oh, wait a minute. You don't like to be the face of a team and take all the criticism? Kyrie and Kevin Durant are right there. Like, you just love playing defense and running and passing and creating three-pointers. This is your nirvana. Like, to me, it was the Golden State Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets, the teams that could most unlock what Ben Simmons has done. He is a former number one overall pick who has had this obvious roller coaster of a career. I think you get the best version of him, better than we ever saw in Philly. in Brooklyn. I really do believe that. And the reason, by the way, like all of this is so funny, beyond the fact that we've never seen this dynamic of power, just like players flexing. By the way, minority owners like Michael Rubin, who's like friends with James Harden, owns the Sixers, like all of the intrigue there, like Daryl, for all of the success.
I think you should be clear about what you mean by minority owners when you say Michael Rubin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fair. Instagram Michael Rubin. He's the guy who's not Meek Mill in the photos of him hanging with Meek Mill. But the point is that Ben Simmons has been proof that you never should underrate the soap opera to come.
Man,
everybody
right.
Who said
text.
Trade. Oh, God. Just team issued gear is what Mina Kimes is putting on for a podcast audience. But never underestimate how much worse someone else's household is when you're thinking about, should I trade this dude who's unhappy in my household right now? Waiting for Daryl Morey was the right move. And it was the right move because there is dysfunction all around this sport in ways that even surprised me this time, to be honest.
And what I think is most impressive is how they did all this without tampering. That's just incredible. That's just like a mind
definitely
connection
no tampering
that they have that is just outstanding to understand what everybody wants and make it happen without tampering. Magnificent right there. That should get Daryl Morey GM of the year alone is the telekinesis he has between him and James Harden. Outstanding. James Harden, who I believe represents himself, right, as an agent.
Yes, his mom is like his rep in some way.
But I don't want to like fall for a Twitter ruse. But so please put allegedly irresponsible, whatever watermarks you can throw on this. Didn't a professional dancer basically break this news in Philadelphia?
I hated it so much.
Oh, you hated that? Oh, it validated my entire series of jokes I've been making all weeks, allegedly. Like, again, I don't know if allegedly this person actually is a professional dancer in the way that she described herself, but if she is.
I feel like this piece of news allegedly is like one of those things where it's so on brand you want to believe it, but it might not be true. Like it seems so like, you know, something that would happen with James Harden. Like when that fake quote from Kawhi broke where I think it was he eats apples before every game and says apple time. Everybody just believed it because it seemed weird enough for Kawhi. This is James Harden breaking the news of a trade via lap dances, his apple time.
It's like when Aaron Rodgers was supposedly boycotting the Super Bowl if he had to be vaccinated. Everyone was like, seems about right.
Oh, by the way, for the record, Ben Simmons, now fully vaccinated, is ready to take advantage of all of Brooklyn's indoor eating options.
Play
at Barclays Center. Yes. I mean, I miss Ben. I just want you to know that I miss you and what we have.
Come join Nets World.
Hold on. Before you go, Alabaster, I just need to explain to Mina why I hated that story. I hated that story because we've been talking about James Harden for several weeks now, and every single time Pablo goes for the stupid, obvious strip club joke, and I'm like, there has to be more to James Harden than your terrible strip club jokes. And alas, there seems to be nothing more to James Harden other than his affinity for strip clubs and his trust in people who should not be trusted, apparently.
The confidentiality of the profession has held up. I mean, they didn't scoop. Well, actually, they did. No,
yeah, I was going to say, it hasn't held up at all. This woman, immediately told the world that James Harden broke the news to her. What is the funniest job, or the funniest type of, I guess, person that might break a big piece of sports news? Because you remember, gosh, who was it?
I think it was the
Patrick Mahomes extension. It was someone in Kansas City who worked at a liquor store, and I think someone from the Chiefs came in and brought a bunch of champagne. Yeah, and she scooped Adam Schefter, if I'm remembering this correctly, about the Mahomes deal.
Oh, like it's like, guys, I have a big scoop. I work for Edible Arrangements, and I just made a giant bouquet of fruit. Yes. For James Harden.
That spells out welcome to Philadelphia. All right, Alabaster, what you got?
Like a Photoshop artist who was asked to Photoshop a guy into a new jersey could be a funny one.
The time Daryl Morey asked you, Mina Kimes, to make an etch-a-sketch to recruit a free agent player when he was with the Houston
Rockets?
It was Dwight Howard. Yeah.
So
allegedly.
One thing that was great was Paul George's barber broke his OKC extension before Woj and Chandler.
Yes. Yes.
That was a good
Great callback, Charlie. Yeah.
I have a real question, and particularly for you, Dominique, about the player empowerment era, which is, where does that really stand right now? Yeah, Ben Simmons got where he wanted to go, but he had to give up $20 million to do it. And everyone sort of mocked him for 9 months while he refused to play basketball. And James Harden was so afraid of public scorn that he refused to publicly ask out while leaking his public demands to Woj. So, like, are we entering a new phase of this where people are sick of it, even though it gets the players to where we want to watch them?
Pablo, I saw you put your finger up like you had something important to say.
Yeah, you know what player empowerment is? A real good name for a strip club.
Oh, gosh, you're the worst.
Definitely. Definitely a lot of movement there.
Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, the thing that bothers me about most people's criticism of the player empowerment era, because no one really brings up player empowerment. Oh, what's that? Anyway, my computer started playing noises in my ear. Anyway, people only bring up player empowerment era as a criticism. And no one brings it up to celebrate it at all. But I feel like there are like pros and cons to the way things were before. They're going to be pros and cons to the way things are now. And fundamentally, the player empowerment era is not about players having all the control. It's about them having slightly more control. And sometimes people with control do dumb things and messy things and ugly things. All in all, it feels like to me that the player empowerment era has made the game a little bit more interesting and more modern. And the fact that it coincides with us losing interest, frankly, in the regular season, like I don't connect those things together. I think those are two separate things. But overall, like it's fun. For someone who doesn't have a team,
it's particularly fun.
And if you have a team, then you got some hope every now and then. It just seems like a more entertaining product than it was before.
I think what we're saying here, maybe we could kind of use this to jump to football after this, is, you know, like in the NFL, you've got all these quarterbacks who want to leave but won't say out loud that they want to leave. And so we're in this weird, annoying limbo. They're not actually holding out. Football, a lot of that has to do with the nature of football players' careers. Obviously, it's, although Ben Simmons, you give up a lot of money, but you know, how long you can play, whether or not you're actually willing to do it. Whereas what we have here is, here's the ugliness of what it actually looks like. Here's what it actually takes to get out, whether it's Anthony Davis with the That's All Folks shirt, Ben Simmons literally not playing, or James Harden doing the basketball equivalent of how to lose a guy in 10 days and simply making himself disgusting to basketball teams. It's just not pretty. It like, if you actually are willing to push it to the limits, fans will not like you, but it appears that that is what it takes.
Yeah, I mean, what they're really saying in all of those examples, Mina, is that our contract doesn't have to matter.
Yeah.
And that is a change that is understandably infuriating to people who expect them to matter, their employers and fans who want them to live up to their part of the bargain. But again, the logic here, right, in terms of Alabaster, your question, like, were these wise strategies by James Harden and Ben Simmons and Anthony Davis, etc., for them?
Like, not just for them. Not just for them. For us. We just led this off by you both talking about how excited you were about the upcoming teams on both teams. How much more exciting. How much more exciting the East is now. How much more interesting it is. Like the idea that all of us are up in arms because we're offended because they mistreated their GMs or they mistreated their local fan base or they mistreated the owners of the team, to me feels like a stretch for us who generally want to be entertained. It's entertaining.
I just want to backtrack on something a little bit. Have either of you seen How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days? Because I'm worried that analogy flew over your head. I can explain it if necessary.
Yeah, please walk us through it.
It's a romantic comedy in which, what's her name? Kate Hudson plays a, of course, like female columnist, often the main character, romantic comedies, who does a column about basically how to make yourself unappealing to men, like being like a horrible girlfriend with disgusting habits to get Matthew McConaughey to dump her. That's basically what James Harden did, is what I'm saying.
But
a lot of people know this, probably got it. You guys didn't get it.
Did she wear a fat suit?
The problem with that particular analogy is, don't they fall in love, right?
That's true. It is, yeah.
On the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
They fall in love on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, so like.
So you have seen it.
Of course.
Spoiler alert. Oh, yeah, we've all seen it.
Of course I've seen it. Yeah. I just didn't think it was an apt analogy because in that case, James Harden would have signed a long-term deal with the Nets. Got to follow it all the way through.
Let's talk about the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Before we move on, I just want you to know that there is a chance, a great chance, that this photo will be recreated with James Harden standing in the Trae Young spot. And I can't wait for that.
That is going to be such an electric. Whenever these teams play, I think they are on the right. They're still have a regular
March
season game.
10th.
Can you imagine two angrier fan bases at the same time? It's just screaming, you know, horrified Sixers fans, and then me. Amazing.
Oh, man. In right, Brooklyn, guys, March 10th? It's the day after Biggie died in Brooklyn. Is it in Brooklyn?
I'm not sure.
It's in Philly.
It's in Philly. Oh! You know, that's the best and scariest version of that game.
No, it's not.
In Philly.
Oh, it's definitely the scariest version. Poor Ben Simmons. They're going to try to break him mentally in that game.
He's not going to play. No shot.
That's fair.
Scary hours.
Well, that's the next song.
When he plays.
Right? When does he return?
He needs to shoot a three in an opposing jersey in that arena at some point. Just shoot it. I don't care if it goes in or not. Like it, and the Philly fans should respond by applauding. No matter what.
If it goes in, that would be the most amazing. That would, Pablo, you would love that.
I think I would cry. Yeah. I would cry. Tears of joy.
Super Bowl.
All right, moving on to the Super Bowl. All right, our question. Who do you think the better team is in the Super Bowl, and who do you see actually winning the game?
Anticipating that we're going to already betray our convictions.
Mina?
Wow.
I've got the Rams in this one. I think they're the better team pretty much every matchup you look at, other than kicker, where the Bengals are definitely stronger and have an incredible kicker, by the way. Otherwise, when you're looking at, especially in the trenches, how these teams match up, it's pretty hard to come up with a rationale for the Bengals winning. They've done a lot of, obviously, it's been an incredible season for them. Surprised us in a lot of ways. The defense, which has got a lot of kind of role player veterans, has been much better than I expected, in large part, I think, because of how well they're coached and how well they play together. Joe Burrow, I call him Joey Buckets because he gets buckets. I love the way he plays. I love watching him. I just don't think they're going to win. I just don't. The only way, Dominique, that I could see them, I guess, pulling off the upset, especially given the advantage of the Rams' pass rush versus their offensive line, is if Matthew Stafford has more than one turnover, which is totally possible. Yeah. That could very well happen. But again, just on paper, the Rams are the better football team to me.
Yeah, I mean, you went through everything. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think most reasonable, like, football analysts see that as a decided advantage in the Rams' favor. But all of us reasonable football analysts thought the same thing about Kansas City last week. So, like, that is the only thing we can point to is, like, if the quarterback forgets how to play in the second half, something like that goes completely wrong. And this particular quarterback, Matt Stafford, is probably more likely to do that than the one that we saw last week. I do think they got him beat in just about every area. Mina hit on the trenches, which is always the most important thing to talk about because you sound really smart and football-y. And also, it matters. We get all caught up in receivers and quarterbacks and running backs and safeties, but it often feels like if you have the ability to, like, overpower someone and dominate them in the trenches, you're not going to win. And I see that as what's going to happen. And it's not as if the argument that I see the Bengals pulling off a big win is, yes, Stafford plays badly, but Joe Burrow plays out of his mind. Joe Burrow has not been playing out of his mind necessarily. Yeah. Like, he's made some things happen, and the hype around him is largely connected to this, like, improbable run that we don't completely understand, so we give all the credit to Joe Burrow. He's just as likely to struggle in this game as Matt Stafford, but he doesn't have nearly the amount of help that Matt Stafford has.
I do love how now the question to, like, you know, the presidential election question, who do you want answering the phone at 3 a.m.? The answer is now Joe Burrow, conventionally speaking. It's like, no, I want that guy. He doesn't ever lose. He's always very calm and collected and everyone else is panicking. Like, I and by the way, I believe in that to the extent that I can very confidently picked the Bengals in this game at the risk of obviously no reputational impact. Because again, on this show, I've called for the murder of Jimmy Garoppolo allegedly, and no one cares. So I'm just going to keep rolling with these upsets. But the point is that Joe Burrow, 68% of his throws under center on play action, more than 10 yards per attempt on those. I mean, the question and the phrase that I will now use in the lineage of phrases that you use to sound smart about football is getting pressure with four.
Yeah, put it on.
And
the
it
list.
Does feel like, Aaron Donald, Mina, like,
yeah.
I just don't know how you solve the Von Miller Aaron Donald conundrum.
Yeah.
Specifically, if you're the Bengals O-line.
Yeah,
that
right.
Would be a counterpoint.
It's a real problem, especially because of the way they use Aaron Donald, which yesterday on NFL Live, I compared him to Cooper Kupp, which sounds crazy, but when you watch the Rams defense, they use him as a chess piece, to take advantage of mismatches on the offensive line, obviously overload versus certain blocking groups. But he literally plays every technique possible, and he plays it so well that they have to always slide protection to him or throw in extra blockers. And your reward for doing that is a one-on-one with Von freaking Miller. It's absurd, especially when they're lined up on the same side, Dominique. It's honestly, it's a math problem with no solutions for the Bengals other than trying to get the ball out quickly.
Right. And I think often we look at Matt Stafford as if he is this turnover machine. At least that's been the knock against him, 41 touchdowns to 17 interceptions this year.
Led the league in picks.
Right, he did. But Joe Burrow was third in the league with picks with 14. And also, Joe Burrow compounds that problem by holding onto the ball for a long time. And that's a roll of the dice, because when he does that, he eludes tacklers and creates the Patrick Mahomes-esque big plays. But also, he gets sacked. And sack fumbles are a problem. So they're putting themselves in a dangerous situation. It feels like for the Bengals, everything is a high risk kind of proposition. But for the Rams, the proposition doesn't seem nearly as dangerous for anyone on their on their roster.
It's funny though, you talked a little bit about like how now there's this perception that Joe Burrow is so much more reliable than Matthew Stafford. There was also a question on First Take, who do you trust more? Which is a very, they love that one. And I saw most people said Joe Burrow because we associate Matt Stafford with throwing all these interceptions. But I just saw Joe Burrow try to throw the ball to Nick Bolton in the AFC Championship. And it was lost to the sands of time. But that was an insane throw that made no sense. It was near their own end zone. And Matt, if Nick Bolton catches that football, we're having an entirely different conversation.
Of course, his sunglasses look so stupid if that's what they're
doing. He doesn't wear them. He doesn't wear them. I mean, I've been bringing that up, too, because we keep going back to this Stafford throw to Tart. That was like, Jarkowski Tart. That was just like, seemed like he was trying to throw the game away. But in that situation, I was like, all right, I see the receiver he's throwing you to. Yeah. He's under pressure. He lobs it up in the middle field. It's a bad idea. It's ugly, but like, I see what you're thinking.
It was also an arm punt, basically.
On Joe Burrow's interception, he's rolling right. No defenders, no offensive line in front of him. And he manages to throw into the only person that's in the area. Like, there's not even a receiver running there. Like, what are you thinking? You don't throw it out of bounds. That was a more head-scratching play, but he wore
that's
sunglasses
football.
and he won a lot.
Dominic, how does that make you feel? Because this is something I really felt this postseason. I feel like there's been a lot of dropped interceptions in this postseason in particular. How does it make you feel as a former defensive back, knowing that if an interception is dropped, no one remembers it ever happened?
I mean, it makes me seen as someone who's dropped plenty of interceptions. I'm like, oh, it happens
to them
too.
That's why he doesn't play wide receiver.
Yeah, that is a brand new joke, Mina. How did you come up with that one? How long did it take you to write
that? No one ever says that, so I figured I would say it. Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah, I mean, it's the Tart one people are going to remember. I don't know why, but it feels like that's going to linger for some reason. The Nick Bolton,
I feel like,
because
Jarkowski Tart's
about.
Just an unforgettable name.
You know what, though, is so incredible about the Tart one, and I think matters in this game as we talk about
Pablo,
potentially turnovers being what
one.
This could swing on for an upset. The play after that, Matthew Stafford throws a beautiful hole shot to Odell Beckham Jr. This is the coverage I sent you, Dominique, asking you if it was quarters or cover two. And that honestly, like, that's who Matthew Stafford is. If he has a bad quarter, if he throws an insane interception, like he did in the beginning of the Bucs game, he almost got picked. I remember he will come back. And he will continue to push the ball downfield. And that's another reason why I have confidence in the Rams in this thing.
And that's what they say about Joe Burrow. Like, no one says that about Matt Stafford, but they say Joe Burrow gets up and shakes it off, and he's so cool.
Yep.
I was thinking.
But in the second halves of these games, the Bengals are, like, phenomenal, right? Alabaster put that card down. Like, it's just crazy how much better they are after halftime, but Dominique, you were saying.
No, I was saying that earlier in the week, I was trying to think of someone who is as cool as Joe Burrow is, like, throughout the course of a game. And you know who I came up with? Jay Cutler.
Because there's
no one, like, we celebrate Joe Burrow because, like, after he gets sacked, he gets up like he doesn't care. Like, that's basically my full memory of Jay Cutler. It's like throwing an interception, going to the sideline, like nothing happened.
Is Joe Burrow the coolest quarterback in the NFL right now?
That is definitely the straw poll result.
He's the hottest right now, for sure. Like, I don't mean sexually hottest. I mean, like,
We know that, like, because your rankings are very different.
Yeah, like when a rapper has like a hot freestyle, that is the guy that everyone is talking about. And they're like, that guy, even though you recognize that he's not the best one, you're like, right now, he's the hottest. So right now, Joe Burrow is the hottest quarterback.
It really is fascinating. Like, this Bengals team that has made it to the Super Bowl largely on the strength of turnovers, defensive adjustments, their goddamn kicker. The narrative around them is just that they have the best quarterback in the history of the NFL right now, which is pretty much how the football. And I'm really not trying to shade Joe Burrow. I think he's been good. Fabulous. I just think it's kind of funny, Dominique, that the game is being positioned the way we're talking about it.
That's the way that Pablo likes it. It's easier for him to digest that way. So we gotta chew it up for him like a baby bird, and spit the quarterback in his face.
I like watching my stories. What can I say?
What's up, Allie?
Only Mina made a pick. I need you two to make picks.
Rams.
34-31 Bengals.
Nobody asked for your numbers.
I got numbers now.
W, you got the Rams too?
Yeah, I got the Rams too. This luck is going to run out at some point. No one in Cincinnati, including Joe Burrow, if you talk to him at the first day of training camp, thought that they would be in the Super Bowl. Yeah. So
they were 125-1 long shots.
I would understand maybe picking them if I watched them in the playoffs and they just dominated people. And it was like, oh, they're not who we thought they were. But like, at no point did I see like a dominating performance. They should have lost. And I can't believe I got in an argument on Get Up one morning about arguing that getting sacked 9 times and winning is somehow something to be proud of. Stop it. That is called an aberration, not a strategy.
The Bengals are here in large part because of their turnover differential. And I was arguing with, this is just us talking about our arguments with other people. I was arguing with someone that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing if you won games because of turnovers going your way. I mean, that said, Jesse Bates, who is involved in a lot of those turnovers, their free safety has been incredible in breaking up passes and, you know, being on the ball. So there is something to the combination of him and that 4-man rush with Trey Hendrickson, who's also been really good. But there's also a fair amount of luck. And, you know, I will see if it runs
Alabaster,
out.
You know what I'm hearing, Alabaster, listening to our friends talk about Joe Burrow? I'm hearing just the lingering resentment of, you know, people who just can't get over the fact that their precious little Patrick Mahomes, he's not in the Super Bowl now.
Wow. Yeah, I loved it when Joe Burrow dropped into coverage and took away the middle of the field against Patrick Mahomes.
Either way,
when he peeled off that defensive line and surprised him, it was just spectacular by Burrow.
You putting on that voice is like you're mocking us. It's like someone celebrating that the American economy is in the toilet. Like, it's bad for all of us that Patrick Mahomes is not in the Super Bowl. I don't know why you're happy about it. It's not good for us to have a Mahomes-less Super Bowl.
Speaking of the American economy, I was actually surprised nobody drew a connection between Ben Simmons and James Harden forcing their way out of their jobs and this nationwide trend of people quitting. I feel like there's something there, although most people don't give up $20 million in fines, so maybe it's not.
Yeah.
But most people aren't.
Imagine hating a coach that much, by the way. Imagine hating your coach that much.
I don't have to imagine.
Honestly, that's how I feel when Dominique is on the show. I feel like I'm Doc Rivers and he is Ben Simmons.
I actually really like you.
Who am I? Mm.
We're neighbors.
Oh, thank you.
You're Joel Embiid.
All right, guys.
Only because
I don't think
we can't give Pablo that title.
That's fair. I don't think we have any more stories to talk about today. I think it was just the Super Bowl and Ben Simmons.
I'm with you.
So that's our show.
Oh, I don't get to go back and talk about more stuff?
What? Oh, you can keep going.
Oh, no. You can count that on. It's almost weekend. I'm never
going to say wait. In the way, throw out your hottest Super Bowl take right now, Dominique.
Hottest Super Bowl take.
Like the thing you believe, but you wouldn't say on Get Up.
You go first.
Put it on social.
You go first, because I need some time to think of something. Yeah, Get Up loves to clip a take and put it on social. Slightly devoid of context to drum up some interest. That's their move.
So I said 31-28 Rams. I think the Rams are going to win by a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I see how this game works.
Yeah.
It's scorching.
That doesn't feel like a very hot take.
By the way, that's the least hot take, because all it is Mina hedging against her other pick.
Picking a favorite.
Yeah. I said, so on Bomani's podcast yesterday, I brought up the idea. You remember when Super Bowls used to be blowouts all the time?
Yeah.
I got a feeling that we're back to that. And that was similar to what you said. So two cold takes. Pablo, save us with something hot.
All right.
Are you going to kill somebody again? Please don't kill anybody.
I think there are going to be more cryptocurrency commercials than there are points.
Heads or tails?
Fortune favors the brave.
Heads or tails? Put a bet on it, Pablo. Tell me which way to bet it. Heads or tails on an opening coin toss?
I'm going all noggin, bro. Also, by the way, a great name for a strip club.
Wow.
I hate you so much.
Absolutely not.
I hate you so much. Get us out of here. Please, give me
free. The podcast audience,
give us don't explain it.
A circle with my finger.
Don't explain it.
Full circle.
Give us free. Your brain, I hate it in here. I want out of your head. I don't know how it ended up in here, but I don't
Dominic, we miss you in L.A., man. We're hanging out here, maybe getting the coronavirus.
No FOMO. No FOMO here. It's not happening.